There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, and there you have it.
There you go.
With the qualifying.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Steve Faub, my co-host. This is podcast number 1083, February 24th, 2025, Stephen.
This F1 Weekly Podcast is brought to you by Yahoo Ads. Yahoo Ads provide you, the F1Weekly.com web surfer, with ads that interest you. From tickets to the Canadian Grand Prix to ringtones for your cell phone, Yahoo Ads get you the stuff you really want. Click on them. You know you want to.
Thank you, Steve. Keep up the good work. And thank you, Yahoo Ads. Anyway, this week we have more classic Nasser Hamid. This week we're going to focus on Motorsports Mondial, the beginning of Motorsports Mondial. These are early versions. Once again, we're still in 2006, and he's just getting in and hitting his stride. So it's great stuff. A couple more weeks, we'll have more interviews. I've got Johnny Herbert lined up. Lots of good stuff. We'll be heading into Nigel Mansell in the future. So please stay tuned. I want everybody to dig it. And yes, we do need your contributions to keep this program on the air. Just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab. You know, you'll want to. I want to thank Jason Bentley, the original JB from Down Under. Thank you, JB. And there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Keep up the good work, Nasser Hamid.
Now we're going to go into my favorite segment of the program, Motorsports Mondial. This is brought to you by our Motorsports Memories homie, Nasser Hamid. Nasser, how are you tonight?
Very good, thank you.
How was your race weekend?
Race weekend was amazing. I am missing Formula One very much.
We all are.
But, you know, if it's not there, you have to grasp for something else. So there was a lot of action this past weekend.
Excellent. We're going to cover this action, as you say, right now, baby.
Absolutely. And we'll start with champ cars, because that's the thing closest to Formula One. I normally don't use the same words in the same breath, but, you know, motor racing is motor racing.
I agree.
And in champ cars, AJ Allmendinger back on top and Paul Tracy wrecking in the Rockies were the main news of the weekend as far as champ car racing was concerned. The race took place in streets of Denver, Colorado, of course. And AJ Allmendinger won his fourth race of the season for his new team, Indec team, Foresight team. Brazilian Bruno Junqueira was second, and Dan Clark from England was third. You know, they call him Dan Speedy Clark. So he's getting up there. On the final lap, Tracy tried every which way to keep second place, but his nemesis Bourdais made a clean pass. And going into the final turn, Tracy tried too hard and ran into Bourdais, which shouldn't surprise anybody, taking both out. And just like the San Jose race and the Alex Tagliani incident, Bourdais marched up to Tracy for a little push and shove. And, you know, these two have been going at each other for the last couple of seasons. And at least Tracy, I have to give him credit for this. He came up with best quote of the weekend, and I quote, "The French like to keep the helmets on." End of quote. And how do you take that, Clark?
We're smart.
We being the French? Or,
exactly.
Okay, good.
Anybody who keeps his helmet on is smart.
Good. And in the championship, Bourdais is still leading the championship, but Allmendinger is closing in fast. Bourdais has 275 points. Allmendinger is second on 243 points, just three ahead of Justin Wilson, who used to be his teammate
right.
at Roseport.
And I quickly want to add this from my perspective. I think Paul Tracy is becoming really a dirty driver, and I think he should be replaced by Christian Kleen.
No pun intended, of course.
No pun intended, of course. And on a more serious note, any updates on Cristiano D'Amata?
Thanks for asking. You know, he was hurt in a very bad accident at Road America when a deer got into his helmet after it collided with the car. But today it was in the news that, you know, he is improving. He's still unconscious, but they have taken him off the respirator and also basically taking him out of the super intensive care unit. So, you know, things are improving very slow, and it's very sad what has happened here, and we all wish him, you know, all the best and speedy recovery.
Absolutely.
Okay, then we move on to GP Masters, this new series for retired Formula One drivers.
I love this series. I wish they showed the races on speed, but they don't. They only have updates.
Yeah, they should show. I'm really interested more in interviews of these people, you know, Mansell, Fittipaldi, Patrese, all the drivers.
Arnoux.
From the past. Absolutely, Rene Arnoux. Let's see if he can make a snipe comment about the engine supplier like he once did with Alfa Romeo.
Exactly.
Anyhow, good news for American racing driver Eddie Cheever. He won the Masters event, which took place in the rain at Silverstone. Belgian driver Eric van der Poel was second, and Christian Danner, now a commentator on German Premier TV, was third.
Yeah, and I have to say that this German TV is very much Germany's speed TV, as they say.
Jawohl.
Yes.
Yeah, it is. And Christian Danner, you know, many years ago, I remember watching a race at pre-race show at 5 in the morning, and they were interviewing different drivers, what is the meaning of your name, right? And I don't know if you remember that segment, they asked Christian Danner, what does your name mean? And he goes, Christmas dinner. And R. Nigel Mansell, former world champion, he was the spin master of the day. First, he spun on warm-up lap and then twice in the race before retiring on lap three. Oh, dear. But he's a gutsy guy. He's going to come back and win more races.
Yeah, he was fine. He had some technical problem with the differential on the car, actually causing him. Each wheel was spinning at a different pace, so he was always spinning around.
Yeah. So this time he had a genuine reason to gripe because, you know, Patrick Head, who, you know, one of the principal at Williams.
Of course.
One of his complaints about Mansell, and a lot of people have said the same thing, that he was whining. Everything was like a major international event. But, you know, he made his mark in Formula One, and we wish him well. And a little bit about Eddie Cheever. He was born in Phoenix, Arizona, but raised in Europe, drove in Formula One for several teams, including Alfa Romeo, Arrows, Ligier. Not the finest car in Formula One, but, you know, it's a great achievement just to get there. And the highlight of his Formula career was in 1983 when he was driving for the Works Renault team. And his teammate was a certain driver by the name of Alain Prost. And we all know how far he went. And Cheever's best finish that year was second in Canada. So, it was, you know.
Yeah. Now, where was Cheever raised in Europe? Because I always detect a strange accent.
Kind of like me?
Yeah, a little bit. Funky.
Yeah, he spent most of his early years in Italy. His father used to own, you know, family may still own, sort of like a fitness center, you know, like a Nautilus kind of deal in Rome. And so he grew up there and raced in Europe for many years. I remember when he was very young, he was driving for the Lancia sports car team. And he even tested with Ferrari at the invitation of Enzo Ferrari. Well, I think he was not even 20 when he did that. He was very young. So he's done pretty well for himself. Okay, and just a little word about Eric van der Poel, ex-Formula One driver from Belgium. He took part in a few races in the early 90s, and I think he's one of the last drivers who ever drove for the Brabham team. And he won the Sebring 12-hour race in 1995, driving a Ferrari. And if anybody is interested in looking at this website for GP Masters, it's pretty simple, www.gpmasters.com. They have a pretty good bio on drivers. And, you know, in this series, all the drivers are ex-Formula One drivers. So if anybody wants to read up on these drivers or the series, I would recommend that. It's, and this is not a commercial endorsement. I mean, I've gone through it. It's pretty nice.
It is pretty nice. I've been there myself.
Now, something for your interest, WRC World Rally Championship. Le Français Sébastien Loeb scored his fifth successive win in the Rally of Germany, driving a Citroën, and thus equaling the record of 26 WRC wins, which was held up to now by Carlos Sainz of Spain. So one more win, and he'll be on top of the world. And Loeb's teammate, Daniel Sardo was the full name, from Spain, was second. And Finnish driver Marcus Grönholm was third in his Ford Focus. Loeb is still leading the championship with 84 points. Grönholm is next on 51 points. And 10 points behind him in third spot is Daniel Sardo.
Bravo, Sebastian Loeb. Bravo, bravo, bravo.
Yeah, you know, up until a few years ago, almost all the top drivers came from Scandinavia. Basically, Finland and Sweden, but now we're seeing a lot of drivers. I mean, in the early years when I started following Formula One, you know, I was, and still am, a huge rally fan too. Very few drivers came from Scandinavian countries. You know, there was a British guy named Roger Clark and Sandro Minardi. These were the two main names. And there was even a guy, a very big name, Sobislav Zasada from Poland. So maybe, you know, Kubica has taken some hints from him. Anyhow, moving to British Formula 3, which I consider the best series if you have aspirations to go into Formula 1. This is where you need to be. Young British driver Mike Conway, and this is a name that probably will go very far, won both rounds at Silverstone, and they were racing the same weekend as the same place as the GP Masters. Thank you. His teammate is Bruno Senna, who was second in the first race and eighth in the second race. Both of these young guns, they drive for Double R Racing Team, where one of the R's is for a certain Raikkonen, and the other is for Robertson Brothers, Kimi's management team. And I don't know if you know this, Kimi Raikkonen drove, I think, like 23 car races and went straight from, I believe, Formula Renault into Formula One.
Correct.
What had happened there, Steve Robertson, who was his manager, him and his brother saw a lot of potential in Kimi and basically shopped him around. And I don't know all the details of that contract. You know, these things are never made public. But I have heard that they take about close to 50% of Raikkonen's earning for getting him, helping him get into Formula One. Kind of like, you know, Willy Weber has a 15% cut off.
Yes, some of these deals are, I call them backroom deals. And sometimes they seem unfair, but that's racing.
Yeah, and, you know, the thing is, if this unfair deal was not there, Raikkonen might be driving, you know, Formula Vauxhall or something. But I think he's so talented, he still would have made it to Formula One. But, you know, that's what I call welcome to the world of high stakes and finance. And in the British Formula 3 Championship, Conway is leading with 219 points, and Bruno Senna is second on 151 points. Now, a quick word about German Ricardo Formula 3. We normally don't talk about German Formula 3, but here's another name that is worth, you know, keeping an eye on. There is a Dutch driver of Chinese descent, Ho Pin Tung. He is still leading the championship that was raced this past weekend. He finished 5th and 6th. They normally have two rounds, just like many of the feeder series. And this race took place in Assen, Holland, which is very well known for the MotoGP race. And this is a name to watch. He is 23 years old and has raced in go-karts, Formula BMW, both in Europe and Formula BMW Asia, and have also tested a Williams Formula One car in the past. And with Formula One having a race in China, you know, on the way becoming a big economic superpower, I won't be surprised if they somehow find him a seat in Formula One just to make a statement.
This young man is actually quite popular in Holland.
Well, he should be. He's a local, you know.
Well,
Dutch homie, I would say.
He's a Dutch homie, as you would say. But believe it or not, Jos Verstappen is still the big man on top in Holland.
Jos Verstappen is so popular. It's unbelievable.
It is unbelievable. Yeah.
And I'm amazed at the level of interest. You know, England, Germany, I can understand. France, Italy, for passion for Formula One. It's a big country. They've had a lot of champions. But Holland and Austria really surprised me. Both are very small countries and have a tremendous voice. Finland also, you know, and all the drivers that have come up from these countries. But we're going to come back stateside, this side of the pond.
There you go.
Your next favorite racing, IRL, Indy Racing League. Penske driver Sam Harnish retook the lead in the championship after winning the race in Sparta, Kentucky. Scott Dixon was second for Team Ganassi. Paul Sitter, Elio Castroneves, teammate to Harnish, was third. Harnish now has a slim 7-point lead over Castroneves in the championship, 418 to 411. And Ganassi drivers are next, Weldon on 394 and Dixon with 385. And most people, including Harnish, feel that he will lose his championship lead because the next round is a road race here in Northern California on August 27th, which I will be privileged and lucky to be covering with you.
Exactly. F1Weekly.com will be at Infineon Raceway to cover the IRL race because, well, most people know that we are an F1 website, but we do cover open wheel racing in California because it's in our neighborhood, but also because there's going to be a lot of Formula One cars at this particular race. There's going to be a historic Formula One race. Yeah. They'll be qualifying. There'll be a race. And also there's some interesting team owners to talk to that always can answer some interesting questions and give us a little perspective on their Formula One heritage and why they're in IRL today.
Well, yeah, sure. You know, like Penske, he's the main man. He owned a Formula One team.
Exactly.
You know, John Watson won a race for him in Austria. So then there's a lot of involvement. You know, talking about like cross-referencing, Kevin Harvick's one of the guy on his team now, mm-hmm. is a guy who used to work for Cosworth Engineering. So you always have a lot of, you know, people who are here will go to Formula One or, you know, the other way around. And, you know, Mario Andretti hopefully will be there.
Exactly.
Cheering his son, grandson, Marco.
So, we will be, Nasser said, cross-referencing because when you go to these other open-wheel series, there's always some F1 wannabes. There's F1 vintage guys, F1 engineers that have crossed over and gone into this racing series, so it's always exciting, and we're going to get you some good interviews, folks. And if you have any questions, let me reiterate, if anybody has any questions, maybe for Roger Penske or Mario Andretti, email us those questions and we will take those questions directly to the main person at the race.
And talking of Marco Andretti, this always gives me a, you know, kind of how things have changed or times have changed. His grandfather is Mario Andretti, you know, one of the most respected famous race car drivers, very classy, articulate guy. You know, man of taste and culture, you know. I was reading a bio on Marco, and they asked him his favorite music. And obviously, I did not expect him to say Verdi or Beethoven, you know. But one of the groups he liked was 50 Cent.
So I like that.
Yeah, me too. So, but, you know, times have changed, and, you know, we all have our priorities and
that
interests.
Is today's culture.
Yeah, absolutely. And the biggest culture in America today is NASCAR.
Speaking of culture.
Yeah, exactly. NASCAR, the boys were racing at Watkins Glen. Now, again, talk about how things have changed, you know.
Okay, now, the irony, IRL is going to a road course at the end of this month, and NASCAR was at a road course, which always causes wild and crazy race.
Not just a race course, which was synonymous with Formula One racing. I remember when I started following Formula One early 70s, U.S. Grand Prix used to be the last race, U.S. or the Canadian. And all the drivers loved coming to Watkins Glen because, you know, it was not in Bronx. It was in upstate New York, beautiful area, fall foliage and all that. Very nice track, too. And have you seen what they've done to accommodate NASCAR, how the track is? It just has a few turns.
I know.
But they do turn right, surprisingly. But anyway, the race was won by Sunday's race, Nextel Cup, by Kevin Harvick from beautiful Bakersfield, California, also known as Onion Capital of the World. And who was second? Tony Stewart was second. Jimmy McMurray was third, followed by another California driver, Robbie Gordon. And did you get to see the Busch race they had on Saturday?
No, unfortunately, I didn't get to see any of these races. But Nasser, I'm sure you'll tell our listeners what happened.
A little bit. Well, I was lucky enough to watch it, and I enjoyed it very much. Robbie Gordon, you know, his background is tremendous racing background and success. Off-road racing, he was very big in Baja 1000, Mickey Thompson off-road racing. He was driving the last few laps like he was in one of those Mickey Thompson off-road championship, banging all over Kurt Busch, and I think on one of the last corners, he hit him pretty hard, and Kurt Busch's car was like all, you know, wiggling all over the track, but he hung on to win the race, and Robbie was second. But it was a great finish, and what a road race should be. So there you have it.
And there you go. Keep up the good work, Nasser. That was a great Motorsports Mondial report. We'll be back in 60 seconds.
And here's your F1Weekly.com trivia answer. Between the 1990 and 1991 season, after the only 11 races counted rule was dropped, the solitary points system change that occurred was changing the top step on the podium from 9 to 10 points. It would take another 13 years before the change to the current point system would come into effect. So there's your trivia answer between the 90 and 91 season.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. There you have it. Another great question from Will at MyTriviaPodcast.com. We're going to go right into the wrap-up now, gentlemen. But Steve, I think, has a couple of emails.
We have a couple emails this
week. Now, these are not females, right?
They're emails. No, these are emails. Right. Females only go to Desiree. Yeah, for those of you, send your females to Des. Hi, Clark. Love your podcast. Great format, great information. I am a fan since your first podcast. Since we're going to hear more about Robert Kubica, I just wanted to let you know that you are mispronouncing his last name. It should be Kubica, not Kubice. Just like the ITV guys say it on their broadcast. Thanks for the podcast and keep up the great job. Greg, your Polish F1Weekly.com fan in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. Thanks, Greg. Next one. Hi, everyone at F1 Weekly. For the Renault Fernando fans, give a listen. Keep up the good work. I can't wait for each new podcast to come out. Waiting for Istanbul is killing us. P.S. I really like Nasser's segments. Thanks again for the best podcast in the world, Paul. Thanks, Paul. And the last one from Charles. The trivia questions are always great fun. Keep them coming.
Well, there you have it, and there you go. Thanks, everyone. I like that part. The best podcast in the world.
It is.
That's over the top.
We're a little bit.
Yeah, biased, man, but how many liras did we give him?
Maybe we gave him pesos.
There we go. Okay, let's wrap it up. Thanks to John at meccaofspeed.com, Martin for our logo. Make sure to check out Caton Designs for professional graphic design work. I would also like to wish a happy birthday to Toby, our webmaster. Happy birthday, Toby. One last reminder, Nasser and I will be covering the Monterey Historics this weekend. Make sure to stay tuned for interviews, pictures that will be posted sometime next week.
And here's your F1Weekly.com Formula One trivia. Now this question is called Stats You Wish You Didn't Have. I'll name three somewhat obscure but yet interesting and certainly trivial statistics, and you tell me what driver owns each. Number one, most races without a single point. Number two, most points without a championship. And number three, most races without a championship. I'll have the answer toward the end of the podcast.
Stay tuned for the interview with AJ Allmendinger's engineer, Mike Cannon.
Mike?
Yes.
Hi, my name is Nasser. How are you, sir?
Nasser.
Thank you, sir.
I'm Clark Rogers with F1Weekly.com.
Hey, Clark. What's going on?
We've heard a lot of things about you lately.
Most of it juvenile, yes. Yes.
A funny guy. You're clicking with AJ tremendously right now. I just spoke to AJ, and he's got four. I asked him four races under his belt with you.
Right.
Why is the chemistry working so well? What's going on? What's turned things around?
You know, the easy answer is, I mean, we're always pretty confident. We put quality cars on the track. We explain to AJ, you know, what our philosophy is with the cars. You know, what we think the strengths of the cars need to be for individual circuits. What we're trying to do seems to appeal to what he expects out of a race car, too. It's just one of those chemistry things, really.
He's really been an impressive young man.
Oh, very. I mean, he's, you know, by far and away the big, you know, the best surprise of the season, hasn't he?
Yeah, and when he was let go and then suddenly hired by Forsythe, everybody was sort of stunned. How did that come about?
Well, I think Jerry was looking, unfortunately, he was looking to make a change. I mean, we were pretty happy with Mario. Mario's doing a solid job for us. But Jerry was keen to make a change. AJ became available. And so he decided to give him a whirl. Obviously, we've been very happy with AJ, too.
Obviously. Great stuff so far. Three wins. Third today in qualifying. Can't beat that. He's pretty happy in front of his home fans. Now, you come from a racing background. Your father was a race car driver. Where have you worked in the past? What's your background? How long have you been in Champ Car?
Interested in being a race car driver like that.
I drove Formula Fords for 2 years back in 84, 85. But, I mean, I go all the way. I was a mechanic on Roberto Moreno's Formula Atlantic team.
Wow.
If that tells you how far back I go.
That's fantastic.
been doing this for 23, 24 years, and I've done everything. Formula Ford, Sports 2000, Formula Ford 2000, Atlantic, Super Vs, Indy Lights, did Indy Lights also with Players Forsythe. I started with Players Forsythe in 97. Ran Lee Bentham in 98, got moved up to the Champ Car thing when they took on the second car for Carpentier. But spent a lot of time in junior formulas with the drivers I'm sure you would have heard of, people like Scott Goodyear and Paul Radisich, Roberto Moreno, a lot of people like that.
Very international field of drivers.
Indeed.
Paul Radisich was from New Zealand, right?
Yeah, I actually went down to New Zealand and ran him in the Formula Pacific series down there, and did the series down there, which is the most fun you can have racing. It is a terrific series.
Is he in the Australian V8 series these days?
Yep. Yeah, he lives in Brisbane. And he drives in the V8 series, and we see him every year that we get down there.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Small world, huh?
That's fantastic. So it looks like AJ is a pretty lucky guy. You know, I like to think so, Clark.
Well, thanks for giving us some time.
It's just worked out well. I mean, it's one of those chemistry things. Somebody else was talking to me today about it. It's like a sitcom or a band. You know, together everybody works well, and then somebody decides to go solo, and they fall on their face. I mean, it just happens to work, and it's not just me, it's the whole team, really.
Yeah, I bought some of those solo albums from Mick Jagger.
Wow.
Indeed.
If we may ask, is he staying with your team next year? Do you know what the lineup is? Can you talk about it for next season?
I mean, that's very much their intention. I mean, he and Jerry are trying to work out exactly what's going to be. I think Jerry, quite rightfully so, I think Jerry would like to have AJ driving for him for many, many years. I'm just not sure that AJ is ready to commit for, you know, 5 years in the way that Paul is. And so that's what they're working out.
And once upon a time, Gerald Forsythe was part owner of Bar, which is now Honda. Yes. Does he still have any stake in it?
I honestly don't know.
Okay.
I honestly don't know. You'd have to ask him.
No. Can we approach him from that? I mean, is he available here?
I'm not sure. I haven't seen Jerry this weekend. It's not that uncommon for him to show up only on Sundays. I would say 50% of the races we see him Saturday, Sunday. The other 50% Sunday only. Whenever he's anywhere near Las Vegas, he's usually up there for a little time at the tables.
Great.
That's beautiful. And he does well.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
That's even better.
Indeed. Yeah. He's no fool.
Yeah, AJ made a few cracks to Sebastian about going to Super Aguri next year. Does AJ have any F1 thoughts?
You know what, to hear him? No. He says no. Because I asked him about this. Are we doing great here? I mean, surely Red Bull's going to be taking interest in, you know, maybe some Formula One stuff. And he said, I don't know if that's my cup of tea. I like doing what I'm doing.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, because Scott Speed's doing quite well.
Yep, very well. Sure, I mean, from our standpoint, we see AJ's got an association with Red Bull. I think this is, you know, as far as motor racing goes, I mean, this has got to be the highlight of Red Bull's season. I mean, you've got a Red Bull-supported driver out there winning races, something they haven't been able to do quite yet in Formula One and a lot of the other series. So I'm sure they're taking a look at him, but to hear him tell it, it's not really his priority.
And that's good to hear. I suppose Sebastian Bourdais did not slip him Mario Thiessen's phone number then.
Indeed. I think we're all taking up a collection to get Sebastian to go over Formula One.
Exactly. We're all hoping for him. I guess Bernie Ecclestone made some cracks and hoping that Sebastian would go to Formula One next year. I don't know, maybe because of Juan Pablo leaving. And then the French could use a driver.
Yeah, very much.
What are your thoughts on the series going spec car? Everybody has the same car next year, same engine, same car. Your thoughts on that?
There's been a lot of talk about that, and it's funny to hear some people saying, well, you know, the new car, it'll put everybody on even footing, et cetera. Well, we're kind of on even footing right now. And, I mean, we've all had the Lola for several years. I mean, if you're in the fifth year of running your Lola and you haven't quite got to the front yet, I don't know why you think you'd suddenly be at the front with the new car. So I think the teams that have good brain trusts like Newman Haas, Roux Sports, PKV, ourselves, Walker, we're going to come to the front.
The cream rises to the top.
There's some very good teams out there. There's some teams that haven't really shown, but HVM, for example, that is a very underrated team. It's an excellent group of people. So it'll be quite competitive, but I still think that the usual suspects that have, you know, a very well-rounded package, decent funding, good solid drivers, the way Sebastian, Paul, AJ, Justin Wilson are, I think those guys will come to the forefront again.
And since you've been in the business almost a quarter of a century, of all the drivers...
Thanks for putting it that way.
Yeah, the century word.
Okay, for over 20 years, I'm sorry. Among the drivers
not counting who are driving for you right now, who do you think was the best or who had the most potential in your estimation?
I always go back to Greg Moore.
Greg Moore, yes, he was very good.
Yes.
Greg were you with the team when he was
yes,
team?
Yes, I was. And Greg was remarkable in the car and out of the car. There'll never be another Greg Moore, which is a shame.
Now, from an engineering point of view, have you looked at the new Panos chassis? What's your opinion?
Well, the guys that designed that car are—it's very much the same design team that did this Lola, and they did an excellent job. This is a terrific race car. It's, in a way, it's been a blessing to run it for as many years as we have. So we've done about 5 years of the damn thing. They met with all the teams prior to laying out the foundation for this car and said, "You know, look, what do you really like about the Lola? What are the shortcomings?" I'm sure the teams all had a lot of the same feedback. These are the strengths of the car, and I think you should try and retain that as best you can. So I'm sure they've done a real solid job. I'd be very surprised if they haven't.
Will you miss the ovals? No oval next year?
Not really, no, because we don't do enough of them. I mean, if we were going back to doing the super speedways, did Michigan, Fontana, I'd be keen. To go to the one-mile ovals every now and then, I don't think these cars are very suited for it. In this country, there's a real good oval show, and they call it NASCAR. Right?
Never heard of it.
Yeah, it's on TV from time to time. But, you know, they do a terrific show. They really do. And, you know, why we'd want to go in there with our cars and do something that's already being done well, I don't know if that's what we should be doing.
That's the best answer I've ever heard in my life.
Oh, really? I've got a future then.
I think you're going to make it. Thanks for spending some time with F1 Weekly. We really appreciate it.
Absolutely.
And keep up the good work.
And here's your F1Weekly.com trivia answer. Well, for the first part, the most races without a single point, that honor is bestowed to Luca Badoer, who entered 56 races, qualifying and running 48 of them for 40, Minardi, and Lola, without having scored a single point. Most points without a championship, well, that's DC. David Coulthard has 513 points as of this podcast and no championship. Just for comparison, three times champion Jackie Stewart only had 360 points, which would still be 416 if we were using today's scoring system. And finally, most races without a championship is obviously Ricardo Patrese, with 257 races, although he amassed 281 points and 37 podiums. So the winners of today's Stats You Wish You Didn't Have, Luca Badoer, David Coulthard, and Ricardo Patrese.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king, the Swami himself, Nasser Hamid.
I'm doing very good, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing well. We had a great weekend last weekend at the Monterey Historical Races. We talked to some fantastic people. We'll quickly just say a couple of words about your experience at the Historicals.
Well, you know, I've been to this event many times, and this certainly was the very best, you know, to see these Cooper cars that basically not only changed the face of Grand Prix motor racing, but also overall racing, you know. Rear engines, when they came here, they were big news, and everything now is rear engine. And to see these cars run around, and then to meet the man who was really the man behind these things, Jack Brabham, to talk to him, it was just a fascinating experience. And, you know, when I started following Formula One 1973, he was already retired 3 years. And just to be able to talk to him, and it's just an incredible feeling. Very privileged to go and talk to these people. And, you know, we met Juan Manuel Fangio II also, whom I've known for many years because he raced here at Dan Bernie's team. It was very good. Great trip. How about you?
I had a wonderful experience, and it was a pleasure sharing it with you, Nasser, talking to some of the drivers, such as the driver of the TF106, who was there mostly for a PR engagement, but Ricardo Zonta, a very nice gentleman, and talking to some other people like François Castaigne. It was a thrill for me because I'm a big Gordini fan. Some of my dream cars have Gordini written on the side. So to talk to François was just a thrill that just was the pinnacle of my weekend. So I was very, very happy. But anyway, let's go ahead and do Motorsports Mondial.
Yeah, just one thing on Francois Chastain. You know, we talk a lot about that Dynamic Duel 1979. Villeneuve and Pironi.
Yes.
Here is the guy who designed the engine. He was the man who was in charge of all that operation. Much. It was certainly.
We were kids in a candy store.
Absolutely.
So there you have it. We'll have a little bit more on all these interviews because they were outstanding in future programs, and maybe we'll talk about it a little bit more on this show.
Absolutely. Now, as far as the world of Motorsport Mondial is concerned, some of the big series were off. As you know, there was unfortunately no Formula One race, no IRL race, and no Champ Car race. But as always, there was the, you know, roundy round. But, you know, we're not going to worry too much about that. Anyway, best news that really came out of this weekend is on Cristiano D'Amata and his condition. As we all know by now, he received serious head injuries when his car collided with a deer during testing at Road America on August 3rd. He is still in a pretty serious condition in a hospital in Neenah, Wisconsin, but he is now out of the intensive care unit, which is very encouraging. His condition has improved significantly over the past few days, though he is still not completely conscious, responsive, or able to speak. Let me quote Champ Car Medical Director Dr. Chris Penderski. Cristiano is still making daily progress while recovering from injury. We will now begin the process of planning for longer-term rehabilitation, which is necessary after significant head injuries. End of quote. And, you know, Clark, I just hope that we see a miracle recovery like we did with Zanardi. I mean, I've not seen, I don't even know if the Cristiano D'Amata's accident is on video, not if you want to see that, but I've seen the replays of Zanardi's accident many, many times. What a vicious hit he took, and just to see him come back and race again, it's just an incredible thing.
Yeah.
And I hope, you know, same thing happens with D'Amata.
And our thoughts and prayers are with the D'Amata family.
Sure. Now we move on to racing overseas, DTM, German Touring Car Championship. Bruno Spengler from north of the border, that would be Canada for those who are geographically challenged, won the DTM race at Nürburgring. This is second win in a row for the 22-year-old French-Canadian.
Now, yeah, but you have to remember, if you're Canadian, or if you speak French, you don't race with Mr. Tracy.
That's the formula for success for a Canadian driver. C'est la vie. Well said, Clark.
Thank you very much.
Welcome. There are many interesting names in the DTM series. You know, this series is really becoming like a very high-profile series.
Well, it seems to be attracting some of the great Formula One drivers, and well, not some, not so great, but still some talented drivers.
Oh, absolutely, and a lot of people are going there. You know, this Gary Paffert guy, who is now the test driver, he came from DTM.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're exchanging. We got some former, and we're getting some drivers from DTM, like Gary Paffert.
Exactly, and Jean Alesi, you know, who is always looking, if you listen to his interviews when he was in Formula One, and the joke was with one of my friends was he was always looking for what he called new motivation. So he got some motivation and finished fourth in the race. As you know, he's a former Ferrari driver. Heinz-Erl Frentzen, who won races for Williams and Jordan, was sixth in this race. And talking about world champion, two-time world champion Mika Hakkinen finished 12th in this race. Matthias Lauda, talk about big names. Son of three-time world champion Niki Lauda, driving for AMG Mercedes, was 13th. And Vanina Ix, daughter of sports car legend and multiple winner of Le Mans races, and former Ferrari Formula One ace Jackie Ix, both from Belgium, of course, she finished 18th. Next race on the schedule, or the schedule if you're in England, is on September 3 at Zandvoort in Holland. And I'm sure you remember that track, Zandvoort.
Zandvoort's one of my favorites.
Used to hold Formula One races for years and years. And interestingly, you know, we were talking to Hees van Lennep from Holland.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked him if there's a chance of Formula One ever coming back there. And he basically said no, just because of the economics and politics of the situation. And I think it was he who said that, you know, if Bernie wants 30 helicopters, you know, Dutch track may not be able to provide 30 helicopters for him. So it's amazing what is dictating where Formula One races are headed.
Well, that's why the new tracks look like what they do now when you look at Shanghai.
Sure, Sepang.
It's huge. They're monstrosities.
Absolutely. Bruno Spengler is now tied in second place following his win in the championship on 34 points with Tom Christensen, who's from Denmark. And German driver Bernd Schneider still leads the championship with 46 points. And since this has become a major series, we will keep our audience listeners, faithful listeners, and up to date on how things develop in this series. Now we move to Rally of Finland. This rally is a very famous rally. It used to be known as Rally of 1,000 Lakes, if you remember, back in the day.
Yeah, but I think once the American coverage took effect, mm-hmm. a lot of people got that name confused with Wisconsin.
Minnesota.
Excuse me.
So you're also geographically challenged a little bit.
Minnesota, there you have it.
Yeah, but that's 10,000 lakes. Right?
Yes. Correct.
Yeah.
I had to throw that in there.
No, I understand that. Rally of Finland. For a change, Sebastian Loeb was not the top escargot as homeboy Marcus Grönholm, driving a Ford Focus, won the Rally of Finland round 10 in this year's championship. This is sixth win for Grönholm in his home rally. Actually, if he wins it one more time, then he will tie the all-time record of winning the Rally of Finland. Frenchman Loeb did finish second in his Citroën Xterra. Another Finnish driver, Mikko Hirvonen, was third, also in a Ford Focus. Sebastian Loeb still has a healthy lead in the championship with 92 points. Grönholm is second with 61 points, 20 ahead of Spain's Dani Sardo in third place. Round 11 is in Japan in 2 weeks, and we will keep you updated on that also. MotoGP Czech Grand Prix at Brno. Loris Capirossi of Italy checked out and won in dominating fashion on his Ducati. This was round 12 in this year's championship. A tremendous battle behind him, much like, we always talk, there's always a reference to the Dijon race in 79. And trust me, nobody's paying us to say this. But the battle, did you see this race, Clark, by the way?
No, I didn't.
Incredible finish. I kid you not, it was just like Villeneuve and Arnoux at Dijon in 79. And it was Valentino Rossi, the doctor, holding off the young Spanish sensation, Dani Pedrosa. Rossi did get second place and Pedrosa was third, but incredible battle. Nicky Hayden, our famous Kentucky kid, settled for ninth place after battling tire issues on his Repsol Honda. He now is still in the lead in the championship with 201 points. Teammate Dani Pedrosa is second on 176 points. And Rossi, the good doctor, is third on 163 points. It will be great to see Nicky Hayden win the title and bring it back to the U.S. But I'll tell you, Pedrosa wins. I think it's his rookie season here. Mm-hmm. Incredible talent. And if Rossi can come back from all the points he was behind, that'll be an incredible win too. But let's see what happens. Time will tell. Next race is at the beautiful track in Malaysia, Sepang, on September 10. Which is the same day as the Italian Formula Uno Grand Prix at my favorite track, Autodromo Nazionale di Monza. So that's pretty much wrap up the Motorsport Mondial that our listeners will be interested in.
Keep up the good work, Nasser. That wraps up Motorsports Mondial, as you just said. Now, any more thoughts about our weekend at the Historics? I'd like to tell the listeners that we will be doing some specials with some of the interviews for the F1 Weekly historical segments. But Nasser, just to wrap it up real quickly.
Yeah, wrap it up. I would say that if anybody gets a chance to go to this event, this is pretty much in the same part as the Goodwood Festival in England. You not only get to see a beautiful track, which is in a beautiful part of America, just a lot of historical people there, the history. And it's not, every year they have a featured mark, Mercedes, Ford or whatever, but there are many other cars like, we saw Peter Revson's McLaren, Jody Scheckter's Tyrrell, and there are a lot of other people there that you can meet and,
some fantastic cars, some beautiful marches. We saw Mario Andretti's Viceroy car.
Yeah.
Just great stuff.
I remember, the year, I think it was 86 or 87, I went there when Mercedes was the featured mark, and I met, shook hands, and got his autograph from, Hermann Lang. Hermann Lang drove for Adolf Hitler's official Mercedes-Benz team. So there is a lot of history there if you appreciate that. And if you don't appreciate history and you just want to see a lot of cars that raced 10, 20, 50 years ago, incredible event to go to.
Very good. Thanks a lot, Nasser. Keep up the good work, as we say here at F1 Weekly.
Our shout-outs last week, let's get through them now. The podcasters at f1weekly.com.
Now it's time for Motorsports Mondial,
with Nasser Hamid. Nasser, how are you today?
Fine, thank you. How are you today, sir?
I'm doing fantastic. We got some great news here because there was quite a bit of racing activity all around the world.
Absolutely. Racing, controversy, and great performances, and more, you know, history in the making.
Exactly, and we love this stuff. Definitely history in the making.
Absolutely.
Absolutely wonderful. Nasser, let's begin and jump right into Motorsports Mondial.
Well, we'll begin the begin. And first of all, we'll call Turkey a turkey. In Formula One, as you know, there was this Turkish Grand Prix over the weekend, great race. And now, at the end of the race, you saw the prize-giving ceremony. And as soon as I saw the caption for the person who was handing the trophy to Massa, I just knew something will go out of control. Anyway, FIA will look into this, what I'm calling trophy gate, following podium ceremonies after the Turkish Grand Prix. Latest news is two of the organizers of the race admitted that using Turkish Cypriot leader Mehmet Ali Talat to present the trophy to the winner was a deliberate action. Turkey is the only country that recognizes the Turkish Republic of Northern Cyprus. As you know, they got this beef or cow going on with the Greek Cypriots, and there was a civil war many years ago. But, you know, bottom line is Turkish Motorsports Federation may now face the wrath of Mosley to the max, no pun intended, because bringing political agenda is totally no-no in something of this magnitude. You know, we've had people have made a lot of political statements over the years, over the decades in sports. Remember that guy that ran on the track?
In Silverstone.
Also at Hockenheim some years earlier, who was a retired Mercedes employee. And so he was, you know, everybody has an agenda, but there's a time and place for everything. And I was very surprised that something like this would be pulled out by the officials. You know, it was not like some guy came running with the Kurdistan flag or some, you know, Cypriot flag. But pretty pathetic, and they are even saying that, you know, Turkey may lose the Grand Prix.
Turkey may lose the Grand Prix and still may have to pay
exactly
the fees to hold the Grand Prix. So they're in deep, deep.
You have to be very careful when you sign these contracts, and the other two signatories are like B. Ecclestone and M. Mosley. These are very sharp cookies. But anyway, you know, such is life, and let's see what happens. And moving on to GP2, Nelsinho Piquet Jr. Wins, and Lewis Hamilton steals the show, which was, you know, run in conjunction with the Formula One race in Istanbul. They have, you know, two races. One is the feature race on Saturday, which includes a required pit stop. This race was won by Piquet, and Lewis Hamilton was second, and Hamilton's teammate Alexander Premat with the ART, which is run by Jean Todt's son, Nicholas Todt, he was third. But the Sunday sprint race was won by Andreas Zuber, who was originally from Austria, but for whatever reason, he's racing under the United Arab Emirates flag or passport or whatever. Apparently, he's based somewhere in Dubai or Abu Dhabi. So, you know, he could be the sheik of speed, you know. And he won the race, but the star of the race was definitely Lewis Hamilton. He, I think, on lap two spun out, was like in 12th or 14th place, and then staged a great comeback to finish second. And I tell you, I don't know if you have seen the highlights of the second race. He would have won that race had the race gone another lap.
I agree. I mean, he was passing people. It was almost phenomenal. I mean, I couldn't believe what was going on here. It looked like he had like another 50 horsepower.
Exactly, and I was very impressed. And he even passed Nelsinho Piquet fair and square. And I just was very impressed. And I have a feeling that, you know, this guy is going to get into very deservedly into Formula One next year. But I just have a feeling that this performance today is going to be talked about for years to come. It's just an incredible performance by him. And he's now looking very good to win the championship in the final round at Monza next month. Again, they will run in conjunction with the Italian Grand Prix at Monza, my favorite all-time track, I should say. Hamilton is now leading the championship with 101 points, 10 ahead of Nelsinho Piquet. So chances are that unless he does not finish the race, you know, that's another story, but he should wrap up the championship. It will be great for him, you know. He's come a long way, has been under the wings of Ron Dennis, and it will be a big thing for McLaren to get him and Alonso. It looks like pretty much a done deal that Kimi Raikkonen will be going to Ferrari. Or should I say mounting a horse for the next season. You know what I'm saying?
I understand what you're saying, Nasser. Keep up the good work.
Well, I'm trying. Thank you for the encouragement. Champ Cars, the French Revolution rolls on. Sebastian Bourdais, also known as Sebas in the United States, won the Champ Car race at Circuit Gilles Villeneuve on Monday. And you ask why Monday? Because the Sunday's race was stopped due to heavy rains when A.J. Allmendinger was leading. Did you see this race, Clark?
No, I did not see this race.
It was heavy, heavy rain. I mean, there was no way.
Yeah, they only went six laps, I believe.
Yeah, there was no way they could run the race, not even a Formula One race.
Yeah, I was at the IRL race covering for F1Weekly.com.
Very good.
On Sunday.
There was no rain there, I'm sure.
No.
Northern California, right?
Correct.
Paul Tracy was second. And by the way, talking of Paul Tracy, this guy really knows how to win friends and influence people. Did you see him during the driver parade in Circuit, you know, Montreal being in Quebec, French-speaking Canada?
Of course,
Canada.
His people.
Yeah, well, not sort after of. He said on national TV that French like to fight with their helmets on.
Right, exactly.
He's wearing, this Quebec flag cape and a mask of the Quebec flag and just like teasing the people. So, you know, more power to him. It's good that he lives in Vegas, not in, you know, outside of Montreal. Anyway, he was second, and third was another French driver, Nelson Philippe, who's a very young guy, looks like a rock star. And this is an interesting story. You know, he's from France, lives in Miami, but he grew up in Argentina. So, and his son also races in America. So let's see how far he goes. He's been doing very good lately. He had a very good run at the Milwaukee Oval race also, which surprised a lot of people. And my favorite, Miss Catherine Hartleg, was 13th. Unlucky 13, but, you know, that's not a bad showing. In the championship, Bordet is leading with 310 points. A.J. Allmendinger and Justin Wilson are equal second with 248 points each. So it looks like Bordet is going to wrap up the championship again. And, again, there are some rumors that he might be headed to Formula One, you know, possibly as a tester with some team. So we'll keep an eye on that.
Exactly.
And on a sad note, the Montreal IndyCar race, you know, all the IndyCar races are very popular in Canada because they do like road racing, as we found out when we were talking to Patrick Carpentier at Sears Point.
Correct.
And this may have been the last Champ Car race in Montreal as the promoters plan to move upscale and hold a Busch race next year, to which I say, hee-haw. And we all will be singing, Oh Canada, when NASCAR invades, you know, the northern part of North America. How do you think it will work out there?
I'll be surprised if they're successful. The Canadians have been used to open wheel racing for years, and we'll see what happens. And also, I don't know if they're going to have the draw. I mean, they were complaining about 20,000 people showing up for the Champ Car race, even though it was delayed, and that can cause you some problems in terms of attendance.
Yeah,
but Busch Series, on the other hand, can take off. Especially on a road race.
Yeah. Well, you know, last year I was in Canada. This is around the time for the Grand Prix when the first news came out that NASCAR will be coming to Circuit Gilles Villeneuve. Poor guy will be turning in his grave, you know. NASCAR has come to his track. But anyway, the newscaster in Canada said, and this is not my verbiage, he said this race just might work out because the Jerry Springer show is getting very popular in Canada.
Well, there you have it. That should... That's the final word, as far as I'm concerned.
Exactly. Okay, now we move on to Formula Atlantic, which is to Champ Cars, what GP2 is to Formula One.
Correct.
And another big American young talent, second generation, a kid, Bobby Rahalston Graham, he was the winner of this race. And I'm almost positive that he will be in Champ Cars. And it'll be wonderful to see him and Marco Andretti go to Europe and do GP2 at the same time.
I think that would be the wisest thing to do. It depends on what kind of goals they have.
Yeah, well, I'm sure they both want to. You know, Rahal drove a few races in Formula One.
Absolutely.
And Mario Andretti was world champion. So I won't be surprised if both. You know, this is Bobby Rahal, Mario Andretti, and Michael Andretti. You know, they were pretty big rivals. So it will be interesting if this rivalry continues with the second and third generation and move overseas, see what happens. And we'll keep our listeners posted on all the latest developments. Okay, now we go on to IRL, Indy Racing League, short on fuel and age. Marco Andretti, as we were just talking about him, son of Michael and grandson of Mario, became the youngest winner in IRL history by taking victory at Sears Point, race you covered, with our illustrious producer, Mr. David Tapia. This race was at Sears Point, also known as Infineon Raceway in commercial lingo. While conserving fuel and holding off a charging teammate, Dario Franchitti, Marco and his Dallara breathed a sigh of relief as the full course yellow was, some say conveniently, brought out by a spinning Brian Herta, another of Marco's teammates. What is your take on that, Clark?
I think Brian Herta made a big mistake.
Was it a real mistake or one of those convenient mistakes?
I'm not sure, but since Michael's father, I mean, Marco's father is the owner of the team, maybe gave him a couple of lira.
But anyway, congratulations to another winning Andretti. The tradition continues. Franchitti was second. And oh, by the way, talking of Franchitti, did you get to see Ashley Judd in the pit lane?
Who?
Ashley Judd, his wife.
No, I didn't see her, and I was looking for Ashley Judd.
Well, she was looking mighty fine under the California sunshine, to say the least.
Keep up the good work, Naz.
Absolutely. And in this race, Vitor Meira, this poor kid from Brazil, you know, he's really hustling, and he was third. And, you know, I was talking to a friend of mine today. He's followed racing for a long time, and we were just talking about, you know, talents like Vitor Meira. Well, you know, he's from Brazil, so fine and dandy, but he's still a professional race car driver. And we were talking about guys like Ryan Hunter-Reay, who has won a couple of Champ Car races, Memo Gidley, who is from Northern California. These people have really paid their dues, have won in a lot of races, a lot of series, really proven talent, you know. They cannot get a ride, and Miss Danica Patrick has a $20 million contract from Motorola and has yet to win a race in any racing series.
It's called marketability.
Okay, Scott Dixon, who is a driver for Chip Ganassi, he lost a certain win after a lengthy pit stop, but fought back to finish fourth. This was really his race, but you know, that's the way it is in racing. You know, you take the wins as they come. So, and the final race of the season is in Chicagoland, which will decide the championship between Penske and Ganassi drivers. Penske pilots Castro Neves and Sam Hornish are on top of the standings with 441 and 440 points, respectively. And Chip's challengers, Dan Weldon from England and Scott Dixon from New Zealand, they have 422 and 420 points, respectively. The interesting thing here is Sam Hornish is not much of a road racer, and he knew that going in this race. But to come out of this event only 1 point behind Castro Neves, my money would be on Hornish. No disrespect to Castro Neves, he's a tremendous race car driver. But Sam Hornish, again, in my humble homie opinion, is probably the best talent in America has produced in oval racing since Rick Mears, who I consider to be the best all-time oval racer this country has produced, at least the ones I've seen in the last 20, 30 years. Absolutely phenomenal. And what else? Last item on the agenda, sir, is MotoGP. Loris Capirossi has re-signed with his Italian team, Ducati, for the 2007 season. He has been with Ducati since 2003, and the combination has won 5 Grand Prix and 7 pole position. And there you have it, and there you go.
And here's your F1Weekly.com trivia answer. For the easier question, well, the shortest guy currently in a race day seat is Takuma Sato, and he comes in at 163 centimeters, or about 5'4 and a quarter. And the tallest man, actually it's the tallest men, both Mark Webber and Robert Kubica come in at 184 centimeters, or about 6 feet, 1/2 inch. Now, for the last Italian to win at Monza, you'd think at first it might be Michele Alboreto, but it wasn't. The last one to win is Ludovico Scarfiotti in 1966. Yes, 1966 is the last time an Italian won at Monza. Thankfully, he was driving a Ferrari. So there are your trivia answers.
With that, we come to Musical Mondial. There's too much confusion, and Christian Horner can get no relief. I think we all need some positivity in this racing community. So, gingerly, we provide a little Spice Girl action. Thank you for listening, and ta-ta, till next time.
Cheerio!